if you want to, I think, find that deeper purpose in life, it is just whatever that mission is. It can be whatever you want it to be. But for me, finding really meaningful work where I can feel like I'm having an impact, I can feel like I'm empowering others to do the same, that is my core. So I have to come back to that. So yeah, for me, I think it's the nice part about startups is if you don't know this stuff, I don't think you'll be successful. You could argue the same thing for life. So I mean, by not knowing your why, where, and how, you're really just not going to get there.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Fresh Perspective, where we take another look at life, shift our perspective a little bit, and hopefully learn something new, a new angle on life. So with me today is Josh Romisha. Josh, thank you for being here. I look forward to our conversation. And my very first question, of course, as always, will be, what do you do, Josh?
Sure. It's always a great question. What do you do? What do I do?
What do you think you're doing, right? That's
yeah, exactly. I think the answer is help people build businesses. So work with Stellenbosch University Launch Lab. I run that program, which is primarily focused on helping this university and other universities build businesses from universities. A model that's pretty well known in the global north is just coming to the global south. So helping students, researchers, faculty members build businesses. I'm also a focus on climate. So my big wicked problem to solve in my lifetime is to put a little bit of a dent in the climate crisis. So we do that through helping early stage climate focused businesses start to gain traction, start to raise the funding, start to get to the level of scale necessary to positively affect climate change. And then I think the last part is help people learn a new mindset. We do say you don't need to start a business to be an entrepreneur. So it really is a mindset. So helping people adapt to that mindset, learn the challenges are opportunity, figure out their passion, and pursue that primarily with us through a startup experience, but also they could be taking that back to their families or to the workplace or to whatever it may be and viewing life a little bit differently.
Geez, there's a lot there. I like that.
So you say, what do you do? I don't know. I do other things too, but that's at least what my paycheck does.
Yeah, that's a paycheck thing. Yeah, we'll start there. We'll talk about family life and other things as well. Why South Africa? How did you end up here?
Being American,
people can't from the accent.
Exactly. Now I think it goes back to that entrepreneurial mentality, where there are challenges, there are opportunities. And I think the challenges on the African continent are ones that are candidly very exciting to me. So, I mean, when we were building businesses back in the States and a little bit of Europe, a lot of those businesses now are solving first world problems, getting your groceries faster, making your workplace tools work faster, which is fine. Like those are noble pursuits as well. For me, I've done a lot of travel in my life. I do believe that while intelligence is normally distributed, opportunity is not. And so therefore, there are a lot of people across the global south that may not have the same opportunities that I had. So the premise was, where can we have the highest impact? I mean, this work could be done in San Francisco or London or New York, but to do it in Africa, for Africa, by Africa, we believe, my wife and I and my coworkers, that has a larger impact. Besides the fact that it's just a massively beautiful continent, it's rugged, it's real, the problems to solve are real. And at least the hypothesis is governments aren't going to figure it out the same way that they have in, say, Scandinavia or Europe or the like. It's going to be the private sector. It's going to be people thinking differently about how to solve hard problems. And we find that really exciting. And besides the fact, it's really a wonderful place to live, really good family values, really a culture that just kind of gets on with it. Maybe that's sometimes not ideal, but at other times, I mean, when you come from the States and everyone seems to have an opinion or complain about things that are very first world, I think people here definitely see their place in the world a lot more and respect that place. And yeah, we find that a better environment to raise a family in than perhaps parts of the States and Europe.
Wow. Okay. I'll talk about the family life and South Africa specifically a bit more. Now, let me transition back to Launch Lab. So helping people from the academic sector take something that maybe they wrote a master's or a PhD or something like that on, for example, and then make a business out of it. So what's the challenge in terms of mindset? You mentioned mindset there, being an academic and now trying to be a business guy or girl.
Yeah, I mean, just even specifically, if you've ever heard of growth mindset, this was work done by Carol Dweck at Stanford. A growth mindset is one that views challenges as opportunities. It views continuous learning. It's okay not to know the answer. It's okay to say, I'm going to keep trying. I'm not smart. I just work hard. Like, there's a process. It's more about the input as opposed to the outcome. Yeah. And it's that you're fungible. You can change. Your mindset can change over time. A fixed mindset is one that defends intelligence. How smart I am today is how smart I am tomorrow. I can't continue to learn. I can't admit that I don't know. Mm. And so if you just think about the whole, I mean, I've learned this over the last couple of years, what is research or a PhD predicated upon? It's defending your intelligence. It's literally getting up in front of a bunch of people and saying, look how smart I am. And I know the answer. I'm the expert in this answer. Now let me defend that answer. So that's one big problem, is that usually people at places like Stellenbosch University or UCT or Stanford or Harvard have always been the smartest in their class. They've always, oh, you're so smart. Johnny's so smart. And that actually starts to build this mentality of I'm scared to fail. I'm scared to take a risk. I'm scared to admit I don't know. And to build businesses, to have a mindset that views failure as learning, that views it's okay to put something in the world and get feedback. It's okay to admit I don't know. It's okay to admit that I made a mistake, which is going to happen when you're building businesses, is a totally different mindset shift. So that's one big issue there, is really helping people find a safe place to make mistakes, to fail, to learn, to admit they don't know, which is very different than an academic setting, especially a research institution. The second part there, and it's less about mindset. Well, it's a little bit of mindset, but most research is done for scientific revolution sort of means. It's never meant to be a product. So across the world, 98% of research done at universities gets put in the bottom, it gets put in a research publication, it goes into a desk drawer, because that's what it's there for, actually. It's there for scientific revolution. It's not supposed to be commercial. With that said, a lot of it can be commercialized, and the Global North has really done a great job of this, of not only creating commercial entities from universities, but creating mindsets around universities.
Yeah.
The second big problem is someone built something in a lab, they spent 10 years doing it, it's their blood, sweat, and tears, and now they try to find a market for it. Most great startups actually go the opposite way. They don't build anything. They get to know a problem really, really well. They deeply, deeply understand a problem, and then they design a solution for that. So it's actually the opposite. So now you have someone who designed a piece of technology or research, really. It's not even technology. It's research. Now they try to find a home for it, and they're super scared to try to find a home for it, because the fact there's no home for it means that they failed. So it's like this really weird conundrum of trying to break a mindset and also find a use case for research, really, in a pragmatic way.
And what are some of the exciting things you've been working on recently, or maybe from the past, where you feel like someone has been able to make that transition smoothly, or
it's a great question. And I'd frame it as, what we try to do here is, you can build from universities. So there are student ideas, there's research, there's things coming literally from a university.
Yes.
But you can also build with universities. So the premise that a university is this innovation engine, it is this resource of experts, of people who are very, very deeply technical skilled. So I'll give an example of both. So building, say, from a university, we have a number of different biotech companies. A lot of them were doing research at the university. They're producing proteins in novel ways. They're doing it in a way that no one else in the world is doing it. Their operating expenses are a lot lower than the US and Europe, because they're in South Africa. These are world-renowned researchers doing it from South Africa. So they're bringing new ways to produce proteins into the world. We're trying to help them figure out, what do you do with those proteins? That's one, for instance. Mm-hmm. Another one, there's some really exciting work being done in the engineering faculty around, say, optimization of energy for different uses. So this could be solar energy, it could be PV, energy efficiency. So we work with a company here, which is a great story, a PhD student who came from a disadvantaged background, and his whole premise and his thesis was, we can save underfunded schools. So poor schools in South Africa, there's no more government funding coming. What if we can save them money on their energy efficiency, and then they can use that to make the school better? Mm-hmm. So you're becoming more clean. So they're going in and doing energy audits. They're doing solar and PV. They're helping finance the thing. They're doing energy efficiency. They're saving schools a significant amount of money, and then also making them more clean and energy efficient. So those are things coming literally from a university, PhD papers, research papers, helping that PhD become a CEO and helping them execute on that vision.
Before you talk about the other side, Josh, could you maybe just elaborate on what that process looks like for you guys?
Yeah, it's a long process. I mean, it's a very, very long process. I mean, it's the companies I'm mentioning there I've worked with for up to 3 to 4 years to really get to anywhere, because the first step in that process is really actually grabbing the human and saying, hey, do you really know what problem you're trying to solve? So you built something, but what problem are you super, super passionate to solve? So we talk a lot about grit. So grit is this mix of passion plus perseverance. If you're really passionate about solving a problem, and that's what entrepreneurs are. I mean, that's the secret sauce of an entrepreneur. They really want to solve a problem. And if you're really, really passionate about solving a problem, then you're going to persevere in the pursuit of solving that problem, even when it's hard. So the first question is, do you actually understand what problem you're trying to solve? Because as we know, a PhD may lead you down multiple different directions that by the time you actually write the paper, it might be very different than what you actually care about.
Yeah.
So what is the problem you're super passionate to solve? And then secondly, I think it's really important to overlay your life. Being an entrepreneur is not easy. It might mean you're not taking a salary for a little while. It might cause more stress at home. Are you ready right now? Is now the moment? And is starting your own company the right way to do this? If you really want to solve a problem.
Which makes it even more important to really care about the problem you're trying to solve, right?
It's like first principles. Go back to first principles. And I think this is for everyone. Like for me, climate change is my passion. So trying to figure that thing out. Why am I working at Launch Lab? Because my hypothesis is if I want to have a major impact on the climate crisis in Africa, being attached to the world, to the leading research institution in Africa might help. That might be a better way. I'll talk again about how we build with the university.
Yeah.
So me doing that alone, that's one way to do it. Me doing it with strong structural ties to this incredible university, and ideally over time, many universities, may have a larger impact, because that's the problem I want to solve. And therefore, I'm going to try to solve it in various ways. So do you know a problem you're trying to solve? Are you super passionate to solve it? Is now the time to give it a go? And is starting your own business the best way to learn in that process? You could join someone else's startup. You could join a corporate. If you really just care about the problem, you actually don't care about the medium. You just want to solve it. And there's definitely lots of different ways to solve that. So that's really step number one, is very human focused, very, very human focused to say.
How do you suss out who's ready? Who's ready now? You know, now is the time. So come and work with us at Launch Lab to try and make this happen.
I think we try to push people a bit hard to really, because it's better to push now and have someone that's not just a yes person. Oh yeah, it's a great idea. Go for it. And the next thing you know, you're 3 or 4 years in, and it hasn't really gone anywhere and you're not that happy. Like really push and do it in a loving way, do it in a supportive way. One of the things we create here at Launch Lab is a community. It is a community that tries and fails and goes and supports one another. So it's fine to have these hard conversations, because they are really caring. I think the next part as well is to really, frankly, to start to work on some assignments together. So here's a couple of things that you could think about. Could you come back next week and we'll have another meeting? And to be honest, I mean, we've also run a number of programs. So in a recent program, it's a 5-week course that literally goes through that process. I have an idea. Okay, cool. Step one, step two, step three, step four and five. Over 5 weeks, we had 25 teams start that course. Almost immediately, 5 or 6 dropped out. And they just said, you know what, like, I don't have time right now. Or like, you know what, I actually don't really care that much about it. Or they just stopped responding. Which is a pretty clear sign that this is not the time for them. Mm. Of the 10 to 15 teams that are left, 4 or 5 are going to go along for the ride. And that's totally cool. Like, they're going to learn something now. And maybe they planted a seed that in a couple of years, they'll come back when times are better or when they find that thing they're passionate about. But of 25 teams, we probably had about 6 that they're doing the work. We offer office hours, which are at your own discretion. So in order to book office hours, you have to book our time. You have to put an agenda on the calendar and you have to rock up. So you almost put the ball back in their court. And the ones that really care, the ones that want to go, of 25, there's probably 3 that will, like, you're in it and they're in it and you'll stay in it. And then it, like, continues from there. There's lots
sounds
of
a little like life.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I laugh when I say, I mean, I build startups the same way I build my life. It's all about grit. It's all about perseverance. The financial side is very similar. Knowing your operating expenses versus your revenue is really important. Knowing your runway, pointing in the right direction. I think the most important thing for startups is to really know what they're passionate about, to really have that clear mission, that clear vision, clear values about how we want to get there. And then there's a financial side of it as well to figure out how to make it work. But there's a big, big life element of this thing, because startups are your life. Like, if you are starting a business, it will quickly become your life. So you better hope that you're building the right one or building something you really enjoy working on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Before you talk about building with the university, could you quickly give your thoughts on, you know, what's vision, what's mission, what's values, you know, what's the difference, and how do you assess what is what?
Yeah, we just actually did this workshop with a really exciting startup out in Pretoria last week. And I'll use that as my example I was building with in a second. But to me, mission is the deep why. It's the deep, deep why. It's the thing that lives in here. It's the thing that wakes you up in the middle of the night. It's the thing that keeps you going. It's 8 words or less. So it's super snappy. So Launch Lab is to transform seemingly impossible into world shaping. That's our mission. Rolls off your tongue. Everyone on my team knows it. Ideally, you're starting, it's how people brand you as well. So hopefully anyone listening to this podcast today will remember me as the guy who's trying to transform seemingly impossible into world shaping. Because what it's going to do is start to create ambassadors out there in the world for you. If that person then talks to somebody else, oh, you know, I heard this really cool podcast last week. You should talk to this guy. He's doing some wild stuff at the university. So it is your external brand, because it is your soul. It is like this depth of soul and experience. It's also, if you could look at it this way, on day number, I don't know, 372, when everyone tells you they hate your idea and they don't want to buy your product, why do you get up on day 373 and keep going? Like, why do you keep just getting up and putting one foot in front of the other and just keep moving? So it is.
I can throw mine in here, Josh, just maybe it helps some other people understand what this means. It's radical and permanent change for my clients.
Yeah.
It needs to be big, you know, exactly what you're describing. Now, sometimes when I maybe have to record something or create a resource or write something that might serve a certain type of client, that's where I go to. You know, that's the why that I'm going to push through. I'm not in the mood now. I'd rather do something that's easier and less complicated. It takes me there. All right. Mission.
And I think I've said to people about you before, Francois, I've used your own words. So that's one, you know, it's working well. And to your point though, you can make decisions based on it. So it's not superfluous. Literally, let's say business comes to me. Is it really transforming seemingly impossible into world shaping? If it's not, then I shouldn't do it. It should help you make decisions. The vision then becomes your North Star. So think of that as a 5-year. So for us, we want to be Africa's leading entrepreneurial development platform. Okay, cool. If we wake up in 5 years and we've done what we wanted to do, we are the leading platform in Africa to help people develop their entrepreneurial skills. That's kind of a BHAG. It's a big, hairy, audacious goal. It's something the team can look forward towards. And it is when you start, even if you're following your mission, there might be moments where you start to veer off path. It's a way to kind of bring you back and say, okay, cool. Are we still walking the right path? Are we still doing what we said we were going to do? And then I think probably the most important part are your values, which is your how. So if mission is your why, if vision is your where, the values are your how. So for instance, my first startup, we did very well financially. We reached our vision, but we actually didn't get there in a way that I was proud of. The business practices we used, the way we worked, the way we treated one another, the way we probably treated our customers, it wasn't something that I really respected by the time I got to the vision. Like we achieved our mission and vision, but our values were not achieved. And you start to, it may sound cliche, but it is the journey, not the destination. The values are the way that we treat each other. It's the way that we interact with one another on our way. And frankly, I think they're important because even if you don't end up achieving your mission and your vision, you still want to know that you did it the right way, that your input was ethical, it was foundational. And for us, we usually go with 3 to 5 values. They're not like tenacity and curiosity. We make them real. We make them fun. We make them tangible. So for instance, our first value is entrepreneur ain't easy. So, I mean, our first and foremost is be the entrepreneur, respect the entrepreneur. It's a hard road. So let's have deep empathy. Let's really love our customers. Let's be our customers. We are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Our last value, our number five, is embrace the booyah. So this thing's going to be hard. So along the path, if there are little wins along the way, let's get up and let's embrace that thing. Let's celebrate. Mm-hmm. Because there's three others in between, but you live them. And they actually should be something that if you told someone one of your values, an entrepreneur ain't easy. I'm like, what's that mean? Oh, well, we are the entrepreneur. We embrace the entrepreneur. And then it resonates with them as well. So that's how we define these things. And I have to say, I have it for my family. My family has values and we talk about them. They're different than my work values, but we have to define those things as well. Mm-hmm. And it will, I think, help people start to figure out where am I headed? How am I getting there? And what does that look like?
I love it. Thanks, Josh. Gary, how do you build with a university?
Yeah. Okay, cool. So here's my example. So we went out to Pretoria last week and there's this amazing, he actually is a Stellenbosch University alumni, but he's been a field vet, a wildlife veterinarian for 30 years. He created the world's largest biobank of African species tissue samples. So here's this amazing scientist / veterinarian who is trying to solve a hard climate problem. To him, conservation is the most important thing on the continent. He's seeing it firsthand. And so cultivated meat is a sector that we're very, very interested in. So can you produce meat without killing an animal? Can you produce meat in a more sustainable way than using, South Africa, literally half of its grain is used to fatten cattle for us to eat them. That doesn't make a lot of sense from an environmental standpoint. That's a very poor way to get protein, a very inefficient way to get protein. So here you have this guy, very, very passionate conservationist out in Pretoria, who started to take tissue samples from rare, unique African animals. He now wants to be able to figure out, how do I commercialize that? How do I market that? How do I build a team around that? How do I raise funding around that? Well, you know, the best, if there's going to be a biotech breakthrough in Africa, it's going to happen in South Africa. If it's going to happen in South Africa, odds are it's going to happen at Stellenbosch University or UCT. Very, very strong in biotech. Like I said earlier, we have a number of companies producing proteins. Well, what are they doing with these proteins? Well, now we're starting to pair those companies up with this external company that's basically using alternative-based proteins to create cultivated meat. So all of a sudden now we have this amazing non-university entrepreneur partnering with university experts trying to figure out this hard problem. Mm-hmm. If I'm just a random guy out in the world, I can't really offer those types of links. Most of his staff now are Stellenbosch University people. He's doing some contract research. So that's a way we build with the university to try to have maximum impact. But we were literally out there last week trying to do mission, vision, values with that person, trying to use that as a way to figure out competitive advantage, figure out your partnerships. That's how we build with. And I think it's really this idea that the global north does this pretty well. The global south just we're just a little bit behind in terms of being able to do that. But this is the way the model generally works around universities.
Okay. Now you've got me interested in talking about cultivated meats and cool. producing yeah. protein. So seeing as the environment and the global environmental crisis is part of your passion, could you tell us a bit about that? What does that mean, producing protein and cultivating meat?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, at a macro scale, I mean, we've just released too much carbon into the atmosphere. That's the biggest problem. Is we've released in the last 150 years, we've released too much carbon in the atmosphere. It's creating a heavy blanket on the earth. And that blanket is creating, obviously, climate change and increasing weather conditions. So what we've done, at least, is said, okay, from a technical as well as pragmatic standpoint, especially in Africa, where are there places that we can poke around? And one of the underlying hypotheses is that people don't really change their behavior because they care about the planet. We're not there yet. Like, we need a real crisis for people to really care about, okay, I'm not going to eat as much, I'm not going to drive as much, I'm going to pay way more for whatever. We're not there yet, unfortunately. That's why it's a wicked problem. But the sectors that we're focusing on have a real value proposition for customers that they can switch and actually help the environment without even knowing about it. That's the premise for us. So one area that I first started working in is off-grid solar. So majority of Africa is actually living off-grid. The majority of Africa will not ever have access to a grid. Even if they did, they wouldn't have appliances to plug in. They couldn't afford to plug in. So my old companies, we were able to sell almost a million solar home systems. So small, distributed, in your home solar that's purchased by the customer. And so all of a sudden now you have an entire group of customers coming up using solar from day one with a better value proposition. So we're seeing that around commercial and industrial solar. We're seeing that around clean cook stoves. So the idea that most Africans wake up every morning, cut down the tree out back, create a fire to posho, ugali, pap, whatever, do that in the morning, do it at night. That's obviously not sustainable, but that's how people do things. If you use a clean cook stove, it's much more thermally dynamic. Thermodynamics are way better. So even though you might be using wood, you might be using 1/10 of the wood. So you're effectively reducing carbon emissions. So we work in those off-grid solar sectors. We work in electric vehicles. So electric vehicles are starting to have a really interesting value proposition where switching to an EV bike, you now can bring down your energy costs, you can bring down your maintenance. So there's a real reason for companies to start switching to electric vehicles, primarily two-wheelers for delivery. And then if we go over to the food tech side, this one's still really hard. I'm not going to lie. It's still very, very difficult to get into a price point that makes sense. But that's why when you really start thinking about how these things work, it probably is public, so some government funding. It probably is private. It's probably university. We'll figure this thing out. But the hypothesis is people are going to eat meat. Like Africans, Americans, anyone wants to eat meat. We actually have a large portion of the world that's starting to come to a socioeconomic status where they're going to desire more meat. Well, the cutting down. So first of all, animal, you can talk about the humane treatment of animals all you want, the commercialization of animals, which is why I'm a vegetarian. I think it's how we treat most of our animals is just terrible. But secondly, from a climate standpoint, to be able literally to cut down all of your native forests, to use all of your wildlife areas to just grow corn that you can feed to a cow that you can then kill to get you protein, like that whole thing doesn't make any sense while it releases a lot of methane in the middle. So if you can literally produce protein, so take a tissue sample of a live creature in a lab, create alternative-based proteins using that tissue sample, and then be able at scale to be able to produce meat that is meatless, or it's real meat, but it hasn't killed an animal. So that one is very tough from a pricing standpoint because it's still very expensive, but groups like Just Food, Upside Meats, Memphis Meats are starting to do this thing at a little bit of scale. Why we're interested is the African angle. So what if all of a sudden you could have springbok carpaccio or antelope or zebra or whatever else without killing these animals? You can do it in a way that preserves conservation and preserves wildlife and do it in a way that's more environmentally friendly. But again, I think it really has to be paired with the university because there's a lot of deep tech and a lot of science involved in this whole thing. So that's a good example, but that's, again, if I come back to my personal passion, my personal mission, then we start to poke around. I believe the startup is a really interesting way to create social change. You can do it through government. You can do it through grassroots activism. You can do it a lot of different ways. I just like the startup. I just think it's really pragmatic and fast moving and innovative. And then once we say that's our tool, okay, what sectors are we going to pop around in? And we may wake up in a couple of years and say, you know what, EV is not really doing it. Even for me, off-grid solar is super interesting, but the amount of carbon reduction in solar is not as much as electric vehicles or clean cook stoves or meat. So we have to be really honest about how we come at the problem. So it's a mix of science and pragmatism.
And also, I liked what you said earlier about the governments won't address these problems for us.
Yeah.
So the private sector is really where it's going to happen. And that opens up a lot of possibilities, especially in the African continent where there's not so much red tape to get things going, right?
I think the best way to do this stuff, I mean, eventually government has to come along, but the government's not going to lead the charge, perhaps the same way they would again in Scandinavia or Europe or the States. But I argue even in those places, you always had entrepreneurs innovating. Once you start to get a little bit of critical mass and people start to adopt, then you can start to bring in governments. I think what we've seen in these sectors across Africa is now you are starting to get the World Bank, you're starting to get donors, you're starting to get development finance. They're starting to be able to pressure governments into saying, hey, like we have to figure out off-grid solar. We have to figure out a better way to preserve our resources. So it usually starts with a smaller scale adoption and then governments get involved. But I'd also argue that the public sector across Africa already doesn't have enough money to solve public sector problems, which around the rest of the world are sewage and education and infrastructure. We already aren't doing the basics. Therefore, we're not going to do the extra part. So how do we alleviate some of that pressure on government as well through the private sector?
Interesting angle. I'd like to talk about the vision, mission, values. Using that to kind of structure the way you approach being a father and a husband and family life. because we don't think about that in those terms, right? It's for work. It's for business. It's not for family life. And then end up not having a clear vision for our families and not doing things that might be very important to us.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, my work with you, Francois, has been incredibly formative for me in this space. But I think the one of the first things you and I did together was really list out, you asked me what I do. Well, the answer is multifaceted, right? So like, what are the titles? Because humans love putting things in a box. So what are we? And for me, first and foremost, I say I'm a meditative athlete. Like for me, being outdoors, having some fitness, that's my meditation. And without that, I'm actually not a good person. Like I'm just not going to be anything else. So if I can't, first and foremost, have my space in the outdoors. So this whole climate thing isn't totally altruistic. Like I need the outdoors. I need nature in order to rejuvenate myself and be the person I want to be. So first and foremost, that's my title, meditative athlete. Second is wide-eyed explorer. So, okay, cool. Like if I don't have exploration in my life, if I'm not out there trying to do a new thing, not a good father, husband, CEO, anything else. So those are actually my foundations. I then move on to being an appreciative father. So that is the next title for me, is really valuing my family, really thinking about my family. And when Francois and I first started working together, I actually, we'll get into my next title. So appreciative father, loving or a supportive husband. So you could argue that should be three and maybe four should be father, but really supporting my wife, loving my wife, putting her up on this pedestal, respecting our relationship. And then number five becomes world-shaping CEO. So placing those things out there, knowing the different titles that I subscribe myself to, and then actually looking back and saying, like when we first started working together, I said those were my titles. And then I wrote them down in the order that I thought I was living them. And then I actually kind of monitored myself for a couple of weeks. And I realized like I was definitely CEO was first, and other things were falling by the wayside. I was putting my wife at number five because I could kind of put her on the back burner and like she'll always be there for me. But that was wrong. That obviously wasn't the right way to live. So I think before that is a bit of mission. Like those are almost mission statements along the way. But starting with those titles, monitoring yourself and seeing, am I in balance? Am I really saying what I do? And then I do think that everyone, if you want to, I think, find that deeper purpose in life, it is just whatever that mission is. It can be whatever you want it to be. But for me, finding really meaningful work where I can feel like I'm having an impact, I can feel like I'm empowering others to do the same, that is my core. So I have to come back to that. So yeah, for me, I think it's the nice part about startups is if you don't know this stuff, I don't think you'll be successful. You could argue the same thing for life. So, I mean, by not knowing your why, where, and how, you're really just not going to get there. The work we do at Launch Lab actually reinforces the work we have to do as humans.
Yeah, I love that. And it's, having been through similar processes, discovering that I'm not actually living what I'm confessing. On a very basic level. Oh, okay. I say, being a father is important to me, but I look at my calendar and like, oh, I only schedule meetings for clients. Why don't I book out and protect time for my kids? Which, as you probably also know, Josh, can be hard sometimes. Can be really hard to do. My work is very exciting to me. I enjoy it a lot and I can see that you feel the same. And then sometimes spending time with a toddler can be boring as an adult.
Every once in a while. Yeah.
But being there and protecting it as a value, fulfilling that role as a value, as a choice, not saying, well, later on it'll come. I think it's hugely, hugely important. And well done to you for actually realizing that and looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, okay, I need to adapt. I need to change. This doesn't help just confessing things, or declaring or whatever. I need to actually align my actions with it.
I think going back to that entrepreneurial mindset, I mean, it's all about testing and learning. Yes. So tinkering. And I mean, I just reread some Viktor Frankl recently and he made a point that there is no meaning of life. Meaning of life is literally, it happens every single moment of every single day. Like the meaning right now may be empowering myself or other people listening to this podcast to live a more thoughtful or deliberate life. My meeting in a couple hours might be really focusing on my daughter's bedtime. It like really changes in the moment. But I do think that being able to have a growth mindset and say, I'm not perfect. Like, I mean, there's days where like this thing doesn't work. And there's days where there's weeks where I am CEO first and I'm kind of an ass to other people because it's really stressing me out. Like, own that. That's fine. But also tinker. Like, I'm a big tinker. So what I will do exactly as you said is like this morning, I literally had from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. was take my kids to school and get in a run. Like, that's more important to me than any meeting. So I put that on my calendar a few times a week, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm going to take my kids to school. I'm going to hang with them, be super present, get a run and end up at work at 10 a.m. and see how that feels. Like, I used to do it in the afternoon. I actually found my energy in the morning was way better. Like, by the afternoon, I'm kind of like cross-eyed and had too much coffee. So I'm actually not that super present for my kids. Mm-hmm. So just mess around with it and see how it feels. And also, I would really, what I've tried to do more often is I'm very apt to give random people an hour of my time. Like, just a random, we have a chat about XYZ, or hey, we have a meeting about so-and-so. Like, really put that thing up next to like an hour with my son. Of like deliberately sitting with him, deliberately sitting with a friend, like, or going for a run. Like, is this actually more important in my life? And can I not like cut this thing back a little bit? Because what you do by blocking these things out, you get the same amount of work done. You just do it much more efficiently, I really believe, with much better energy.
Like, that's yes, and focus. Thing. Yeah, focus. No distractions. No, just like, I've got this time to 100%. Get this done and get it done.
100%. Yeah.
Totally agree.
Fully agree.
I had a question now that slipped my mind when we were talking about family life. I want to build on just spending time with kids. What are some of the things that you learned just being present with your children?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my kids are almost 2 and 4. So it's been... Yeah, it's just been an incredible experience. And I did wait. I'm 41 now, almost 42. So I waited until I was like really ready for kids. If you ever can be ready for kids, I was pretty ready. It's such a beautiful experience, right? I mean, for one, like, I was just talking to a coworker today, I had my son out this weekend. And to really try to, for a four-year-old, almost a four-year-old, like, what's that? Who's that thing? What's going on there? And I really find it amazing. If anyone's ever read the book, Sapiens, I mean, one of the real reasons that Homo sapiens became the apex predator, for good or for bad, is our ability to tell stories. Like, we tell really good stories. Like, government's a story, money's a story, religion's a story. They're all stories. And I can see my four-year-old now trying to understand the stories. Like, what's the story around that thing? And so actually being present and having patience and not saying, oh, dude, why are you asking me again? Like, go into these levels of depth. Like, why is that leaf red? Okay, let's talk about like photosynthesis. Let's get into this thing. Let's like really get, let's go deep on some foliage stuff. Like, whatever it is, like, enjoy that like learning. Or if you don't know, go research it again and go be a kid again. Like, how's that thing work? Like, I forget how that thing works. The other side of it is, which, I mean, the best self, if you're open to it, again, if you have a growth mindset, if you believe you're a good human, that you're always trying to do your best. I mean, literally, these kids are just a mirror. They're like a mirror of like all your faults and all your beauty and everything else. And they literally will find the thing that makes you the most frustrated in the world and just like poke at it and poke at it and poke at it. And it gives you repeated opportunities. So for me, I'm highly impatient. I have been. I don't want to say I am. I have historically been more impatient and I'm a little bit prone to frustration and anger. It's just part of my nature and also part of why I grew up on the East Coast of the US. And what I've definitely been able to do over the last couple of years is become more patient, is become more tolerant, is not go to anger, is always question. So one of my mantras for this year is never anger, always questioning. So instead of saying, oh, like, man, why are you asking again? I'm like, why are you asking that? Like, that's really interesting. Like, let me go deeper into that. And I think I'll give Francois again credit for taking kind of that explorer view, that tourist view of, instead of just assuming that people are asking me something to be annoying, it's like, well, why are you asking that? What's going on? So I do think kids give you that massive opportunity to really step back and to change the energy. It's the last thing I'll say. Like, I said, I had a really tough meeting earlier today. And I think pre-kids, I probably would have gone off by myself and maybe had a drink or like maybe stewed on it or like whatever. And just had, I'm going to go home today and I'm going to hang with my kids. I'm going to forget about it. I'm going to go hang with them, do whatever, reframe and wake up tomorrow and figure out how to solve that problem. But I think by having another place to go that they don't care, like if there's a butterfly floating around, that's all they care about. And that's actually really cool.
And it's beautiful to see those moments when
cool.
you talk about kids asking questions. My daughter is four, like your son. Obviously, she's learning some religious Christian stuff at school now. So being in South Africa, that's a big part of many schools still. And she came to the counter as I was preparing food the other day. And she's like, why did Jesus make dinosaurs, but also make a volcano? I'm thinking she meant the asteroid or whatever. That'll kill them. That wasn't really smart, was it? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I agree. That wasn't really smart, you know, and just going within and talking about it. And she's like, you know, she's not in a existential or religious faith crisis. She's just like observing. Yeah.
Totally. And I think going down that rabbit hole, just being smart patient. just going down the rabbit hole and also just, I think finding the space. I think that for me is the biggest thing, is finding the patience and the space to just have that one-on-one conversation. And I think, again, I've learned it from Francois, that if you can get down their level, look them in the eyes and really be engaged and really just have that moment to say, that's a really good question. Let's talk about it. Like, why do you think? Like, what do you think is going on there? And, okay, cool. That's pretty interesting. Here's what I'm thinking about. Because what I'm also trying to teach my son is this idea of hypothesis testing. So with startups, we're saying you're always just testing hypotheses, right? So I think this is my customer. I think they might buy this. I think this might be the way to solve a problem. And then testing and learning, like getting hypotheses out there. And hey, like, okay, so if you think, if that's your question, like why was there dinosaurs and an asteroid and this and that? Well, let's make a hypothesis and go look it up and test it and see, like, okay, here's what scientists say. Here's what religion says. Here's what the person down the street says. Like, that's a cool way to try to like come at that thing. And I think broaden horizons as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I remembered what I wanted to talk about or ask. It's more of a comment maybe that you can comment on as well. Is balancing, finding balance. You know, I've been thinking about that for a long time, because often clients will maybe say, I'm trying to find balance, or I'm struggling to find balance. And for me, it's really become clear that you can't find balance, which, you know, links to testing and tinkering and the words you used earlier. It's balancing. It's an active thing. You know, balance means, like, otherwise you're static, right? You're standing on solid ground. But balancing means something has to go back and forth, so it doesn't topple over. And that's helped me just look at my schedule and say, okay, this is going to be a very full week with work.
Yeah.
But and next week, I'm, you know, actually the day after tomorrow, I'm going away for a long week with the family. And then I leave work, because that's the balance. Working on one week and doing that instead of trying to do both and not really being present for either. Sometimes that's the balance. And then other times for me, it's like structuring a week properly and booking out times to do certain things. So balancing versus finding balance. I don't know if you have thoughts on that.
Well, totally. And I do look at my weeks like beforehand and just say, how do I think my energy is going to move? Because I think balance is about energy, right? We have this big ball of energy. It's neither masses, neither created nor destroyed. And you just have to move it around during the week. So if I know I have a super busy Tuesday, then maybe I want to be a little bit more mellow on Wednesday morning, or maybe I want to be with my kids on Wednesday morning, or just seeing how I think the week is going to go in terms of, and do it on a weekly basis, do it on Sunday, set your week up and tinker with it, like be able to be flexible in the moment. But I think be deliberate about, here's how I think this week is going to look. And then again, I'll give credit to you. It's about drawing boundaries. And I do love your definition of boundaries, which I live by, which is joyfully and deliberately disappointing someone. And I added an extra phrase, so I can be my best self. So to me, it's okay to joyfully and deliberately disappoint someone and say, you know what, I'm not going to take that meeting. You know what, I'm not going to be there for that event. You know what, I can't, so I can be my best self. And defining what your best self looks like, I'm not going to go out for drinks with the boys, or I'm not going to do this thing, because I'm going to be who I need to be. So I do think setting boundaries is very hard. You've helped me reframe it as, in order to bring my best energy, in order to be present, I need to be able to say no to certain things and do it joyfully and do it deliberately. And that's not easy, but it's super important.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Josh. So if people want to contact you, if there's an entrepreneur or a student or a PhD student somewhere working on something and they want to get hold of you, how do they go about contacting LaunchLab?
LaunchLab.Africa. I think what we've tried to do is create a pathway for people. So for instance, we have a community event coming up next week. We have, first of all, a number of community events that are open to the public. You can come out. Next week will actually be an entrepreneur, a student entrepreneur and investor talking about how that works. We have a number of students getting up and pitching their business. Anyone can get up and pitch. Like if you want to get up and say, hey, I'm doing XYZ, I'm Francois, I'm doing this thing. Just getting up in front of people and practicing, talking about the passion you have, talking about what you're doing. So we have almost numerous community events every month. We do fun runs. We do a bunch of stuff that you don't have to start a business. You can just come and be part of a community of people that are curious and they're trying to think differently. We have office hours. So on our website, you can go up and take 45 minutes of our time, come with anything you want. Send an agenda across beforehand and we'll talk about whatever it is. I have this idea. I'm thinking about X. I'm trying to figure out my personal mission. Totally free. It's just open to everyone. And then we do have a number of programs. Like I said, a lot of them are focused on the university. They're paid for by the university. With that said, we do have a number of workshops that are open. We are doing corporate stuff as well. We are investing in non-university startups. So the easiest way, the best way to get on the path is honestly come to an event, meet like-minded people, be part of a community of people that are just doing things a little bit differently, or come to office hours. That's the easiest way, but it's LaunchLab.Africa.
Okay, perfect. I've been to your events. There are no online events that I've seen. So they are in person at LaunchLab.
Not as much anymore. Yeah, post-COVID, we moved away. Because it's one thing to do the webinars and all, but I do believe there's a lot of value in just coming to something and basically self-selecting into a group of people that are all just thinking a little bit differently. They're all thinking the way, if you're listening to this podcast today, you're probably on the same vein. Like it doesn't have to be, I think that's the thing I would leave people with is you don't have to start a business to have an entrepreneurial mindset. It's just a certain way of viewing the world. And that's just something you can learn without having to say, I'm going to quit my job and start this business. I just want to think a little bit differently.
Yeah. And like we talked about, even the way you approach being part of a family it gets affected.
Yeah, exactly. Same stuff for sure.
Josh, thank you so much for saying yes to this and spending this time sharing what you've learned and all the angles. It's been great. And if you are listening to this, hopefully you can tap into some of this and reach out. If you resonate with these things, reach out. If you want to bounce some ideas off some people that work with us every day, get in contact with LaunchLab. Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Francois. And thank you for being part of the journey. We wouldn't be here without you.
Thanks a lot, Josh. Appreciate that. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.